Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Portion that went down, and I told him, I said, I will get you
fly down there to Louisiana. What's up with my man? Give him to teach some of the basics about how they play this sport, the right way to play it, what to do, what can you do, what you can't do. You know, all the rules and regulations about the sport of rugby. But there's a few other things I want to talk to him about. I might surprise him a little bit. But I can't wait to have him on the show. I'm going to make some magic happen tonight. But before I continue with my good brother from another brother, that's going to have some great news that went down today. Now, this is in the NFL, and I kind of saw this coming, the whole J.J. Watt injury situation. I felt like they were trying to rush the ship to that because the guy was injured throughout the offseason, throughout training camp, throughout preseason. And I said, at that injury, it's going to be devastating to a defensive lineman because of the way that you line up. When you're in that position, when you're lining up for the snap, that's going to take something out of you a little bit. And when you got a bad back, I mean, let me tell y'all this. Back injuries are more devastating than they appear in professional sports. Back injuries can be one of the worst excruciating injuries to have. And you have to take into account how that affects an athlete's play, whether it's on the field, on the court, anywhere. And this is no exception. And it's a shame because this couldn't have come at a worse time for the test. Texas, you are really going to have to step your game up. Literally, you're going to have to step your game up because now the more so of the pressure is going to be on the offense because on the defensive side, it was J.J. Watt. That was the guy that you worried about. That was the guy that you game planned for. And it's just an unfortunate situation. Now, from what I heard, from what they've been telling me, this injury is a situation that's going to sideline him for quite some time. Now, the Texans put him on injured reserve. Now, the way that it works in the NFL is if you get put on injured reserve, you cannot be active for more than 6 weeks. You have to be out for 6 weeks. You can't play for 6 weeks. You have to be inactive for 6 weeks. And after the 6 weeks, to the organization whether or not you're able to come back and play. So, this is bad timing. This is totally bad timing. And I felt like the Texans were probably going to win the AFC South. I think the division is wide open. I think now with the Colts coming back to win that game in the final minute against the Chargers, why just again in the fourth, I think they saved their season a little bit. So, I don't think this run is over. I don't want to count out Tennessee. I think that win is gave them some confidence. Of course, they lost that run to Oakland, but you don't want to simply lose them out. And even though Jacksonville right now can get the most disappointing team in the NFL, I honestly believe that they should be counted out now. This could be a bit of a wide open run, whether people want to look into it that way or not, but I would have to say, think about that, and it's just unfortunate. J.J. Watt, get better, get well, come back, pick up where you left off at, and, wish you nothing but the best. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I like this game. This guy came out of nowhere in 2012, and just inserted himself that arguably the best receiver in football. He certainly earned the sideline big contract a couple years ago, and now you're hearing talks about whether or not he's really going to be affected by this because of the whole match thing. You know, you look at Tony Romo, his situation, and his has been even twice as appreciated as J.J. Watt. So it's definitely been unfortunate, and I honestly think that this is something that could derail him a little bit for the rest of his career. So take that into account, and you think about everything else that's been going on. And it's just unfortunate. It's just unfortunate. So that's just unfortunate. That's just really, really unfortunate. So, just don't know. You just never really know. And yeah, so I would say get well, come back strong, and try to cover your left arm. It's going to be a tall order, but you're capable of it. And yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually gonna we're gonna take a quick music break, but when we come back, I'm gonna have my mans on the air and we're gonna get this thing going. So this is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We will be right back. Don't go nowhere. About to get good.
Capable of anything. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. I have him here, my partner in crime, my brother from another mother. Yes, my man, welcome to the show again, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much for inviting me back on. Good to be back.
How you been holding up these days, man? You know, it's funny because can you believe that it's been 10 years now since we first met, going back to our days on MySpace when we used to flood that group, Football Talk Central? Man, it's crazy how it's been so long.
No, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, and it was just like, you know, something about after you graduate high school, all of a sudden life seems to flash by so quickly, and you don't realize it, regardless of how much goes in between. But yeah, to think we're in 2016, you know, and we're part of that stage of people who are in the earliest stages of social media, and we're literally getting to watch it develop, and then you just remember these relationships that you've built from your early days and that they're still sustaining just tells you just the impact of what time has done. And just, it's amazing. It really is amazing that it's been a decade, that you can actually say
right on. You
have a decade of your adult life. That's even weirder.
Yeah. Times have changed, man. And now, obviously, before we get started, man, I gotta ask you this. What's your reaction with the whole Les Miles thing, man? Because I went on your page when this news broke out. You didn't seem too surprised about it. It was like you saw this coming from the Wisconsin game all the way to losing to Auburn. So you didn't seem too surprised about it.
Yeah, look, you know, being here in Baton Rouge, obviously we get everything. And it's been no secret that people have always been hurt, been annoyed by the way the LSU offense has been since Les Miles started back in 2005. But after last year, whenever everything was just went down in November, and it was just that whole waiting game and just the catastrophe that was the PR setup for the initial first firing of Les Miles, we knew that this year was only going to be about proving that either last year was a mistake or confirming that they should have finished it out when they said they were going to. So whenever we lost the Wisconsin game, something that we hadn't even done, like, we hadn't lost a first game, an opening game, in over a decade. We hadn't lost an opening game since 2003, 2002, when we lost to Virginia Tech. So whenever you know that we lost our first one against a team that, no offense to anybody up there, is just not talent-wise as good as we are, it was already starting to open up the coffers to ending that relationship. And Jacksonville State and Mississippi State were a nice little holdback, but, you know, it was always, look, you got to win your game. And not just win your game, you got to win the games that you're supposed to win. And when we can't even win the games that we're supposed to win, that's problematic.
Yeah,
so,
I will say
I was surprised that it was that early. I thought they would give it until the end of the season.
Right. I will say the Wisconsin game is tough because Wisconsin is a tough team. I mean, I think they're seriously going to challenge for the Big Ten. But losing to Auburn, I said I would not be surprised if he gets the pink slip immediately after that game is over. And it seemed as if that's what kind of happened. You know, and yeah, it's just unfortunate. But I think he'll bounce back and find a job elsewhere.
You know, I do too. I know he will. Honestly, if I was him though, and I don't think he's fully realized it, but I really do think that, despite what he says about him wanting to go back to coaching, I think he's going to take this next year off. I think he's just going to visit his kids in terms of watching them do sports, because really all his kids are now in college. Just about all of them are in college. I think there's only one remaining that's not. And so one of his pastimes, he's mentioned it a million times, is watching his kids play. And they used to go to even my high school alma mater while he was there at LSU. And you'd see him watching. His son played with my brother. So I really think that he's going to end up taking this year and just decompress. Like, it's easy right. to say for him to want to go right back into coaching, but I think he's going to decompress. He's going to visit his kids around. He's going to be bored out of his mind a little bit, but I think he's going to do a lot of ESPN stuff. And all of a sudden, I expect to see him again in 2018, you know, probably for some mid-major school, maybe like a University of Kansas or, you know, some Big 12 or Big 10 school, you know, that will be used to that kind of ground and pound that he's known for, but doesn't carry all the same necessary championship pressures that LSU provided on him. Because the guy, he's an older guy. He's 63 years old. Like, he's an older dude. He's about to retire, you know, at that age. There's not a whole lot of power level schools that are going to be wanting to take a guy like that necessarily, just because of the fact that they don't have, it's not really a long term plan.
Right.
So,
now, I'm not going to ask you about the Saints, because that was a hell of a game. I will say, I didn't get to watch it. So I didn't get to watch it live. I actually watched much of it on, you know, the NFL replay when they replay all the primetime games. So I came home and caught it, and I was like, okay, this is a good game, but man, 0-3, and this is after, you know, Drew Brees gets the extension. I didn't want to bring that up. I think, you know, I got to let you plug your teams, man. You know what I'm saying?
Look, I have no problem talking with about the Saints, because the Saints are kind of in the same position that I felt LSU was, just to begin with anyways. The Saints have a problem, and the problem is development and choosing. I love Sean Payton as a coach. Every bit as a coach, absolutely love him. I don't think there's any denying that. But I think he's made an awful drafter. His ability to be able to override decisions and choose who he wants, I think is a detriment to the team. I think they've been so terrible when it comes to free agency. And even worse, it's who they cut, and hence building up a lot of dead money. Like, people were talking about how Drew Brees' contract affected something. Drew Brees' contract should not affect the Saints like it is. Like, he's a top five quarterback. He's supposed to be paid like a top five quarterback.
Yeah, he deserves it.
That's not a detriment.
No question about it.
Yeah. And then with the cap increasing next year, it doesn't hurt the Saints in that aspect. The problem is that we've had 5 years of poor draft. You know, we've only had Brandon Cooks, and we're hoping Andres Pete to hopefully be able to, you know, kind of rectify that. But our first rounders have been iffy. Ingram started picking up a little bit towards the last year of his rookie contract, and now is kind of on a palpable one, but we haven't really done great in our draft overall, you know, and our free agent pickups have been terrible. We've put out so much money to pretty much low pickups. So my
right.
thought is, if the Saints don't pull out this year, I would be surprised if our GM is still our GM in Mickey Loomis. And then I think the decision has to go on whether or not Sean Payton should be allowed to have final say on draft picks. And I think if he doesn't, I think that would make a very interesting dynamic about whether or not he'd be able to continue as the head coach for the Saints. But I think flagship Louisiana football is definitely going to see some major changes come 2017.
Mm, right on to that. And you know, I know you've done a lot of things over the years. I follow you on YouTube. You know that. And I see you doing so many different things, and most of those instances involve a microphone. Like, I saw you singing at a church one day, and I was like, yo, this guy's got bars. Okay, he's making it happen. And that sounds a lot better than what I can do. That's why I stick the background. But then I remember you was telling me about a stand-up video that you attempted to do, and I said, okay, I'm going to see what this is about. I go in there and I look at it and I say, yep, that kind of reminds me of me when I first started, in a sense, because I used to say curse words every 5 seconds just so I can make the joke sound good, you know. And when people saw me, they didn't look at me as a guy that cussed a whole lot. They didn't look at me as a guy that would go out there and just talk all outlandish like Eddie Murphy back in the 80s or Richard Pryor in his heyday. And sure enough, I get out there and I just ripped it up and people were stunned. They were laughing, but they were stunned. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, look at this kid right here. Okay. Dude, he's trying to one-up me now. Okay, I got to set my game up for sure. So, I'm like, man. But you know what? I'm happy that you went on and did that because comedy is hard as hell. And, take it from someone who knows this. It's not easy work, but I'm glad that you had the opportunity to experience that. But what was the feeling like for you? Like, were your veins running? Like, was the blood flow? Was there a lot of adrenaline? What was your thought process like when you were on stage?
I mean, look, I gotta give a lot of credit because it was my friend and comedian host buddy, kind of a low key mentor, even if he might not realize it. Corey Mack, who had invited me to go do the stand-up at that venue. And I actually had done it
kudos
twice.
To that guy.
That was my...
Yeah.
Yeah. He helped me on both of them. And that first one, it was like any other time that I've been up on stage, whether it was singing or doing the comedy. It's like you put up your vulnerability. There's a vulnerability that you have with being up on the stage. So, I'm so used to trying to compartmentalize everything so that the vulnerabilities don't go out there. So then whenever you're in a situation where you have to be vulnerable, you have to display whether or not you're going to be good or not in the place where you can be judged, and you actually kind of have to care because, their acknowledgement kind of lets you know that, hey, you're keeping it up, or you're going to be... You're catching, you're connecting with them or something like that. So my blood was constantly running, which is why I think I, was cussing so much, because there's something that's very relieving about cussing. Like, it takes, a lot of the power, and it's, little spurts of energy that you get to put out there. And it's not in a way that people might always like it, but it's just comfortable.
Uh-huh.
It's so comfortable. So I think when it came to that, it was just, you want to make sure you get your point across in whatever, whether it's me singing or whether it was me doing the show. But it was getting it out there. And I loved it. I love being on the stage. Like, it is an adrenaline rush that I think more people need to understand and feel so they can understand what performers go through, because it gives you such a respect for comedians.
Yeah,
and I remember
they really do.
That first one. Yeah, that first comedy act, I put together a full performance. I had written it out. I had bullet points. I had practiced it for like 2 or 3 days in advance. I'd put a whole storyline that went along with it. And, that first one, take away the cussing, I felt good about it. It at least came off the way that I wanted. I kind of hit my point the way that I wanted it to hit. And I got some good advice from some good comedians like... Howard, I can't remember his last name right now, another comedian out of Louisiana, but and Corey had given me some great advice, and it was something to build upon. And then I let my hubris get the best of me. So on the second attempt that I tried to do it, I came in far less prepared. I felt like I could sling it, and as long as I had some bare points, I could expand on it, and that went horribly. That went horribly, and it was good because it just let me know what I need to do to prepare. So anytime that I do any performances, whether it's commentating, whether it's stage work that I'm about to do, whether it's emceeing, there's a certain amount of preparation that I like to have where I can feel best comfortable, even if it's only a few days. It's just letting me know that I have something to work with in advance. Because it does make such a massive difference.
Well, let me tell you, doing it as long as I have, 8 years, one of the things that you'll go through sometimes is often lack of preparation. Some nights you're just going to have an off night. You're going to be caught, and you just kind of have to figure out how to kind of go about it. So that's where the whole creativity flow comes into it. So when you're on that stage, whatever type of preparations you had or that you thought you had that you were preparing for, it's going to be a tough call from the moment you jump on that stage, because the anxiety kicks in and you kind of, your mind kind of goes blank a little bit. And, you know, some shows, you're going to be on top of your game. You're going to have everything that you prepared for. You're going to go on that stage and you're going to rip it, and you're going to go through those moments. It just happens. But I'm glad that you got to see that, because I had always wanted to experience it. And when it finally happened, I said, yeah, I see what these guys go through. This ain't no joke, literally.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it. And I'm glad that you have been at it, man. And, you know, because you've always made me laugh. I see you post a lot of funny stuff. I'm like, this cat right here, man, be killing me. So, yeah, man, you know, and I have to also say that with everything that you've been doing, because I know that we've known each other for a long time, and I know we were both kind of like on the come up as far as what our goals were going to be. Because when I first met you on MySpace, I didn't really have any goals at that point. I hadn't even started doing comedy. I hadn't even started acting at that point as far as my career was concerned. I was taking some classes here and there, and that was it. Next thing you know, I started developing a structure. I started gaining some confidence, and I just went out there and just did it without even thinking about it, without warning. So I would say, man, you are coming a long way, and your chapter is still being written. So, you know, kudos to everything that you've been doing, and I think people certainly can take a page out of your book.
Well, I think a lot of it is just, like you said, it's, you just got to jump in. You know, with what I'm doing now with rugby, I think it's one of those things where it's taking the fruition, it's taking the totality of what I've done in the past and able to help me execute it together, even if it was later than I would have liked it. Because, you know, whenever we first were talking 10 years ago, you know, I was still in college. I was a sophomore in college when we first started talking and started chilling. And, you know, you're still learning what you want to do. I knew I always wanted to be in business. I always knew I wanted to do something that was going to have an impact long term, but I never knew what it was going to be.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes it's just like, you know, it's just what, one, it's what happens in your past that you can utilize to lead up to that point. And then the second thing is you just jumping in. So, you know, when it came to rugby, you know, I played. And I still play, but I don't get a chance to play competitively anymore. So, but you get a chance to be part of it, and you learn the ins and outs, and you start to realize where you see your holes, where you can take advantage and be able to improve upon. And I think that was where it is now with me with rugby. Like, I started doing this media stuff, and it took the aspects that I used from comedy and what I learned from Corey. It took the business aspect that I learned from doing door-to-door sales. You know, it took the social aspects that I learned after moving around most of my life. It took the cultural aspects that I took from being a Nigerian and an American simultaneously. And it's kind of been like, all right, let's wrap this all together and see if we can put this into a creative bunch. And so now it's like, okay, well, let's see this media side where you need to be a commentator, and, you know, you don't want to be your typical commentator, and some might not like it, but I love being hilarious on the mic. Like, it's great to be funny. It's supposed to be entertaining. It's sports. Sports is supposed to be entertaining as hell, you know? And so,
definitely,
you know, there's a lot of people that want it to be stiff and boring, and there's commentators that I love. Like, there's this guy who low-key is my role model, but not really low-key because I tell him anyways. His name is Dallin Sandberg. He's entertaining as hell and still classy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's probably our premier rugby commentator here in the States. You know, you have intellectual ones like Grant Cole, you know, but not that you guys would know, but these are guys that have knowledge and have been able to find a balance between, you know, getting information and entertainment out simultaneously. So you take a lot of aspects like that, you know, and you bring them together. And so it's, hey, I commentate. And then when it came to developing content, it's like you see what you people have done already around the internet, and you're like, okay, let me pull from that, and I can, you know, build from there, and now I have video content, and now I see what I want to be able to project as my vision. I want to still be able to make people laugh, but still give people the information. And then now it's now building up to what I have coming up on October 22nd, which is my first event that I'll be hosting, producing, organizing, and is what I'm in works with now, where I can, I want to bring that flash to rugby and be able to say, let's bring a real show, you know, bring a full show to rugby where it's not just saying, we want you and you being, you know, sports fans who aren't necessarily rugby fans that are, we want to bring you to the rugby game and just say, watch this rugby game and not have any idea. Now I want to be like, look, I want you guys to be entertained before the game starts. I want you to be entertained while the game is going on. I want you to be entertained at halftime, then second half, and then be entertained all the way through so that you just are living in a ball of energy and experience so that you can have kind of a relation idea of what, you know, rugby people feel whenever they play the game and when they've been in the culture itself. So,
right.
Yeah, no, it's just pulling all this together.
Now, piggybacking from our previous interview, what made you want to get into rugby from in the first place? What was it that inspired you to get into it?
What inspired me was absolute cockiness. I was watching what's called the USA Rugby 7. It came on NBC. I think it was this highlight that came on. And I just graduated from college, made it back home to Louisiana from Florida. And I saw it on TV, and I'd known about rugby already because I think anybody who knows the history of football, of American football, knows that it derived from rugby. It's a flat, stone cold fact. So I knew about that, and I had practiced with the USF team when I was in college, when I was trying to figure out whether or not I wanted to play football or, you know, whatever like that. But I, at the time, I didn't think rugby was anything more than an archaic sport, like, you know, just anything. Like, I don't expect cricket to be huge in the U.S. because I thought it was old-time baseball, you know. But much like cricket, I didn't realize rugby had such a huge following outside of it. So when I saw it on TV, I was like, well, you know what? I can't play football, tackle football with friends here in Louisiana. So it would be hilarious if there was rugby here in Baton Rouge. And I did it in irony a little bit, too, because I was like, okay, well, let me see if there's rugby in Baton Rouge. Found out there happened to be rugby in Baton Rouge. I thought maybe it was like a website that was probably dead, you know, that, you know, because, you know, you have those websites where people had it posted, but they haven't done anything in ages, but it's still just there. Went out there, found out that these guys were playing and still playing. And so they invited me out. I came out like the following Tuesday. And they were older guys. You know, I didn't think anything of it. And I would start practicing with them. And they were running. And I would run with them. And they kept running. And I would run. And they continued running. I started slowing down. They continued running. I started like falling on the ground because I was dying from stamina. And in my mind, I was like, how can these old ass guys be outrunning me right now with this stamina? And I was like, at that point, I was like, dude, I can't let them beat me like this. So it kind of inspired it. And then after my first game, I think it got hooked in. And then finally, I think it really stuck into me whenever I went to this rugby social event. It was called Pitcher Tent. And I got inundated fully into rugby culture. And I think that's the moment where I knew I was at the right place. I felt like I was at home with rugby.
Right on. Right on. And it's funny because the amazing thing about it is I first heard of rugby through you. I never knew what it was.
Right?
Never heard of it before. I when someone told me about it, I said, huh, what the hell is that? I'm not familiar with this. Where did that come from? And then I remember seeing you posting some pictures. And I think you guys did a video. You were live on set at a rugby event. And I think you were getting ready to participate in it because I think you had a uniform on. And this was about 3 years ago. And I was like, okay, this is different. I see physical style nature in it, but this is something different. It's almost kind of like football, but from a different perspective. And I said,
right.
I don't know if I could get into it, but this is something that could change the course of sports a little bit, as far as like bringing in a different generation of a sport that people can get into it if they want it. And I learned about that through you. And I said, that's what led me to wanting to have you on the show in the first place, so that, you know, you could put that out there so people could understand it and learn about it, and anybody that's inspired to get into it. And that's how I learned about it. And I said, wow, this is cool. So I got to say hats off to you, man, because, you know, I think there was a video of it, and I've seen some videos all over social media, and I just noticed the physical nature of it. And I've seen a picture of you. You had like a few cuts, I guess, on your lower and your leg or something, like on your knee. And I was like, oh, my damn. Maybe I shouldn't do that, but I would damn sure watch, you know, because that's entertaining, you know. But, yeah, I just think that's a beautiful thing, man, to have the rugby being involved in it as far as, like, sports culture, because I think it's definitely on the come up. Well, I think, where do you think rugby will be, you know, maybe 10 years from now?
I think rugby is on course to being a mainstream sport. But, you know, it's funny because rugby's been around for almost 150 years now. And
wow.
It hasn't found its spot. Like, overseas is there, but I'll be honest, you know, when it comes to sporting markets, nobody does sports like the U.S. does sports. Like, it's a stone cold fact. Nobody does sports like the U.S. does sports. But I think the thing with
right.
rugby was that it needed the medium that is available now, and that it is the technology has finally caught up with rugby, essentially. So, you know, when it comes to rugby, you know, there's an international aspect that's required. It's because it's such a unity sport, and it's such a collaborative sport, it requires a whole international community to do that. I don't think we were able to ever have that international community up until social media started kicking in. You could always mail stuff and whatnot, but it wasn't the same. Even watching a game from overseas, you'd have to get satellite dish or DirecTV or some nonsense like that to be able to access those games. But now, rugby has the opportunity of taking advantage of the digital technology, which is kind of what I've, you know, that's why I've started to learn. You know, you no longer
yeah.
need to have an exclusive, you don't have to get an exclusive subscription to something like DirecTV so that you can watch rugby games from overseas. You literally just have to wake up early enough and find the right website to be able to watch it. It's very easy. You know, and as a result, too, you have social media that allows you to connect with all these other rugby people around the world. And so the community that was already almost a fraternal kind of nature now gets to tighten its wind around the world in a much easier manner. And so rugby then, you know, here in the States, after generations on generations on generations of people trying to work to do it, and it was just kind of staying at this amateur club level because they just didn't have it sounds rude, but I don't think they necessarily had the vision or the concept to be able to promote it the way that it really should be, because frankly you just didn't have the tools, you know. So now you kind of have this new generation, which is our generation, who we've grown up on the social media side and we've grown up without social media. We understand what the changes, and we're very aware of how these changes work. Something that our previous generation not necessarily going to be able to conceptualize very well, but something that the next generation is going to be very inundated by. So with that, you know, rugby here in the West has already grown. It has been a proven statistical fact that it is the fastest growing sport in the nation, having grown 350% since 2004. It's been reported by Inc.com, Forbes, Washington Post, we are the fastest growing sport. So we finally are kicking in. And it's because we finally started putting money into it and started putting a vision to it. And then it just helped that the Olympics, you know, put us on a huge stage. And that's added to the fact that we're the one contact sport that women can participate in and not be judged. And, you know,
wow.
When you add women, Title IX into it, now you're adding two demographics, especially women who are the highest buying demographics into that rugby community, and you're going to start to see this turnover of kids playing rugby at a younger age, playing rugby more intensely, and parents starting to let loose and let their women, let their little girls start to play this formerly considered crazy sport, you know? But it's not. It's just you're seeing the aspect of growth just happen right in front of your eyes. And just over the course of the generations, you're going to start to see more and more young boys and young girls starting to play, and they're going to develop into just amazing rugby stars because we have all the athletic talent. It just needed the skill to
develop. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, So it takes people, for people like me and the other U.S.-based rugby journalists and analysts and media people in general, you know, we kind of put it on ourselves to say, look, let's create a standard for rugby here that we've not been able to put together before. Whether it's just culturally, whether it's traditionally, let's change it where it is easily digestible to people without changing the core of the sport. And so far, I think we're making good headway with that. So 10 years from now, I hopefully expect it to be in a mainstream asset. I really, honestly, after 2020 Olympics, I expect it to, about 2 years after that, to be in a strong mainstream aspect. So we're talking 6 years.
That's beautiful. Now, I noticed that you also do broadcasting for rugby. How has that been working for you?
Well, it has been a very interesting road. Something that I've, you know, learned off the cuff, but I saw it as a necessity. I think it's probably one of the best skills and developments that I've been able to add to my website, GetTimeRugby.com. And I think it's been excellent. Once I've understood how digital broadcasting works, a lot of it has now just been making sure that you provide people with what they need to see to fully be entertained. You know, in the end, broadcasting is advertising for whatever is being viewed. So you need to present it as that. And subsequently, you need to give the viewer a reason to want to buy into that broadcast. And I think that's been amazing. Digital broadcasting, we already know, is the future. People are streaming more and more every day. The Olympics were streamed more than they were watched on TV. And in rugby, whenever everything is time sensitive and it comes to live sports, if you want to be able to just roll over, throw on your computer, throw it on Chromecast or Amazon Fire, or be able to, you know, flick it through your TV and just be able to watch the game. And broadcasting has been awesome. I love being a producer. I love being a director. You know, I've been on the camera side. I've been the commentator. So I have a pretty strong understanding of the aspect while still learning how to do it, you know, better and to get more of a closer and closer to a TV quality. And I think there's still a lot that digital broadcasting has to do, like how to connect to internet via Wi-Fi without it being overloaded by too many cell phones or anything like that. But it's amazing. It's amazing what you can do whenever you put it all together.
I think the whole broadcasting aspect is exceptionally fun. You know, going to broadcasting school, learning how to get into the broadcasting field, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, it's a beautiful thing. Once you can learn the basics and understand how it works and what you're able to do, and just being yourself. And I think seeing pictures, and not just yourself, but other people out there. I got a bunch of friends that are getting into the broadcasting side of this. That they go around and interview people. They have people on their radio shows. They have people on their talk shows. They're interviewing people at red carpet events, the film premieres and such. And I just think it's a phenomenal thing. And you definitely have my support in that, because
you know, like comedy, that's tough to do. Anytime you get on a microphone and you're in front of a camera or if you're on a stage, it's extremely challenging, to say the least. And I have to give you all the props in the world because you can go up there and you can make it happen. And you know what you're talking about because it relates to things that you are all about and what you represent. And putting out a product that you think is going to transcend into something great and it's just going to get better. So I think that's phenomenal to see this whole aspect of the rugby thing happening right now. Now, do you have any friends or any relatives that have gotten into the sport alongside with you?
I've had a few friends, you know, one of my close buddies, his name is Jeremiah Flood. I went to college with him. And you know, he was a guy, he played football, he played safety for Florida International. Dude is mad athletic, incredibly smart guy. We were in the same dorm at USF. Whenever he moved to California, and he had seen it on my post about rugby. And I told him, look, you know, go talk to a couple of these teams. I sent him a list of a few teams that were around his area. And lo and behold, he started playing, and he fell in love with it too. You know, and from there, he's been working with a lot of these higher-end rugby clubs. He plays in a league. He plays in a conference that has elite rugby players all the time. He's worked out with the professional teams. I hopefully expect to see him doing something at that level at any point in time. And then I've had a couple other friends that I've brought into it too. You know, I think there's always that nominal fear of, you know, we're playing without pads and there's not the protection. So there's a lot of the football mentality that kind of blocks them out from it. And so there's that innate fear. But it doesn't stop me from still wanting to recruit people because it's always once you've played one game, once you've gotten into a real game, you'll fall in love with it. It's weird, but you'll fall in love with it. So it's been good. And then as far as family, you know, I'm still slowly trying to get them used to it. You know, if my brother and I, we kind of do very odd sports, out-the-way sports. So for him, his sport ended up being Quidditch instead of rugby, which is equally as rough, if not maybe even more rough than rugby, in my opinion. But, you know, if he wasn't doing that, I would have had him doing rugby too. And I think he would have excelled in it as well. You know, but other than that, it's, you know, I've met a lot of friends that are within the rugby community and just kind of built out from there, you know, and just kind of opened up that aspect that I never expected to fully happen to the level that it has. So it's been good. It's been a nice, it works well as a connection.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, what would be your advice to anyone that's looking to get into rugby?
Anyone who's looking to get into rugby, jump in head first because there's no dipping your feet. Don't tell yourself that you need to exercise to get ready to start playing rugby, as in, like, you will not start playing until you feel like you're in shape. You'll never get in shape enough for rugby. Just go find some cleats, get some running shorts, and just go out and play. Like, it's just you have to just do it, you know? And it's going to hurt the first time you do it, and it's going to hurt the second time. And not physically. It's going to hurt you because you're going to run so much, so freaking much. And it's going to make your lungs want to blow up. But once you get past that, it is exciting. For the most part, you'll meet great people because rugby people are innately very odd folk. And that's what makes them very much inclusive for the most part. So, and needless to say, there's probably a rugby team in adjacent to an area that you live in. Almost certainly, whether it's a club team or whether it's a college team, there's a rugby team that you should be able to join one way or another. And you should be able to have fun, and it's just that simple. You know, you'll learn about the sport over time, you know, you just got to jump in head and feet first. So bend your body. There you go. Just jump it in like that.
Hey, that's great advice. I may look into getting to something like that one day. They don't really have it up here in Detroit, so I may have to fly out there with
that
you.
Oh, that is a lie.
And
they,
yeah.
They do have it in Detroit. They have a ton of it in Detroit,
really?
By the way. Yeah, the Detroit Tradesmen men's
like
rugby
that
team.
Up here.
Yeah,
wow.
See, that's,
I haven't seen
is,
anything
is,
like that up here.
This is why I started doing the media side, because I learned, like, here in Baton Rouge, I found out that Baton Rouge has had a team since 1970-something. I lived in Baton Rouge for, 9 years, 9 years before I knew that there was any rugby even in the area. Like, college, club, doesn't matter. Did not know it existed whatsoever. Honestly, a lot of people are not used to being able to, they're not used to doing the advertising and the promoting, because there was such a club aspect to it. So you kind of ran into it.
Yeah.
Much like
yeah, and that's
did.
One
so
of the reasons
it
I haven't, yeah, that's one of the reasons
perfect.
I haven't heard much about it, because it's not any advertising going on up here. I know they got flag football up here
exactly.
in Grand Rapids in Michigan, but
right.
I haven't seen a lot of advertising. I haven't seen any campaigns. I haven't seen promotions, but I've seen other sports. I just haven't seen rugby up here, but I think that's a beautiful thing, man. And I'm going to look into doing something like that. I might have to fly out there with you at and have you
hey, look,
some
man.
Stuff, man.
I say
sure.
bring it through,
now,
man. I'll show you the ropes a little bit.
Okay, for sure. Now, we're coming to the end of our show. I want to thank you, man, for taking time out of your hectic schedule to do this. What's the best way that people can reach you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for letting me be on the show. I love doing this. I don't get a chance to be on the other side very often, so it's fun as I don't know what to be able to do that. But to be able to find me, you can actually find me. You can go to our website, www.gifttimerugby.com. That's Gift Time with two T's, rugby.com. Or you can find us on Facebook, Gift Time Rugby. Network on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at Gift Time Rugby, on Instagram at Gift Time Rugby, on YouTube, Gift Time Rugby Network, and you can find us on Snapchat at Gift Time Rugby, and Tumblr. I don't really post that much on Tumblr, but everywhere else I said is going to be there. Gift Time Rugby all over, and just keep up. We got big things, like I said. We have our Rugby Game Day event coming up on October 22nd. We're going to be broadcasting Spring Hill College versus LSU Alexandria. We're going to be bringing a real show. We have our halftime artist is going to be a hip-hop artist based out here in Baton Rouge named Marcel P. Black. Real conscious, open-minded, just dope rapper that's out here, and we got like a lot of partnerships. It's gonna be it's a party. It's gonna be a party to
okay.
watch. October 22nd. If you're not in Mobile, Alabama, you can see it broadcast over YouTube on our Gift Time Rugby Network live. So we got great
awesome.
Commentators in Alan Alonji and Nick Gold, and so it's gonna be dope.
Awesome.
It's gonna be real dope.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, thank you again, man. It's been a pleasure. We are coming to the end of the Rocket Sports Breakdown podcast. I want to thank my buddy Gift for coming on and putting that information out there. Y'all heard him. Go for it. Make it happen. Thank you again, my friend. I'm signing off.
Thank
this
you.
Rocket. Thank you, if anything. So take care, you guys.